welcome to Reflections in the Dark. I'm Richard Grund. Reflections in the Dark has been the home of SRT, the Supernatural Response Team, since May 2010. That's how long we've been on the air. But SRT has been around since July 2007. Our motto and our goal has always been Ephesians 5:11, take no part in the worthless deeds of evil and darkness, instead expose them. And that's what we try to do here on Reflections in the Dark, and that's what we're going to do tonight as we take a look at Christmas on Christmas Eve, its origins, its influences, its history. We're going to shake the old Christmas tree and see what falls out. We're doing it live here at this Firefall Studio on Spreaker.com, the only place you can hear us live. You can listen to us archived here. You can download the shows as well. You can also hear us on Blog Talk Radio on iTunes, so welcome to all those listeners. If you want to get an unfiltered, unwatered-down look at the Bible, come to the porch on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Lately, the two shows have been running parallel to one another, but the porch is very specifically a Bible study, a very in-depth, uncompromised, non-watered-down look at the Bible from the Book of Acts church perspective. So if you don't have a place to go to or you just want to add to what you already have, you're welcome to join us. If you'd like to support Firefall, the porch, or SRT, you can do that by going to firefalltalkradio.com or supernaturalresponse.net. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com, Supernatural Response Team. There's also a Firefall Talk Radio page on Facebook, as well as Twitter, at Firefall Talk, at SRT612, and Instagram, at Supernatural Response. So we're out there, we're on social media. We appreciate you coming down to the end of the year. You know, we just had the winter solstice. It was on the 21st. And if you don't know what the winter solstice is, it marks the peak darkness for the Northern Hemisphere. It's the shortest day and the longest night during the year. It began at the solstice ends, you know, and the sun is over the Tropic of Capricorn and all that kind of stuff. But basically, simply what it is that the North Pole has tilted the farthest away it can be from the sun. So what does solstice even mean? We throw that word around here on the show on Reflections in the Dark. It's from the Latin word solstitium, which simply means sun standing. If you ever want to tell your son you have a son and he's standing, just say solstitium. Don't do that. They won't know what you mean. So during the solstice, the sun appears to stand still before it reverses in direction. So what are you supposed to do on the solstice? Well, you're supposed to have a party. You're supposed to be feasting, eat, drink, and be merry, because that's what the Romans did. You see, they celebrated Saturnalia during the solstice with gift-giving and public banquets. The Scandinavian Feast of Jule, J-U-U-L, was done during the winter solstice, where people would dine and they'd light a Jule log, which is kind of where we get a Yule log from. And they would burn it until it was a pile of ashes. And then they would take those ashes and they would either use them as fertilizer in their fields or keep them as charms. During that period of time, there were a lot of bonfires. And of course, you know the word bonfire comes from the Middle English bone fire, a fire in which bones were burned, something they do on the May Day and on pagan holidays. Gee, is that a hint? So for many, maybe you, this is Christmas Eve. I remember the traditions of Christmas Eve. I remember things we used to do on this night. I remember things we did in the morning. We followed what we thought were the things we were supposed to do. I was raised Roman Catholic, so being a Roman Catholic Italian in New York, we celebrated on Christmas Eve. We would go to my grandmother. She'd have all the foods that I would never eat. Bacala, you know, the eels and the scongeli and the sardines and the anchovies and all the things I would go, yuck, and stay far away from. Of course, there were other things and, you know, sweets and stuff like that. But when they brought out all the Italian fish and things, I would go sit in another room. But we always looked forward to that time. And I see it on social media. Everybody's looking forward to talking about family and all those other things. But are these traditions that we're supposed to be doing? I did them because I thought we were supposed to up until about 10 years ago. We still did them. And then I did some research and my eyes were opened and I could no longer accept these traditions as Christian or even biblical. So what are you supposed to do? Many of you, when I'm done, are still going to do it anyway. Nothing I am going to say is going to change how you think or what you do, but you won't be able to say you weren't told. Now, some will realize, like I did, that we were fooled into thinking something was true when it wasn't. So to explain things, I'm going to take both a secular and a scriptural approach, simply because it is both secular and biblical or spiritual, however you want to look at it. Christmas did not become a traditional holiday until the Middle Ages. If you want to look for any evidence that the church before 350 AD celebrated this holiday, you will not. Even the commentaries and the dictionaries and the religious encyclopedias will admit that. Let's pull out some of those. So grab your eggnog or your tea or whatever it is you're drinking. You know, turn on your Yule log. If maybe you have an electrical one or digital one. I don't know. But kick up your heels and let's take a look at this. Holman Bible Dictionary. Christmas is one of the major Christian festivals. Yeah, you're kind of wrong there, but we'll let it go. Christmas is the most recent in origin. The name is a construction of the term Christ Mass and didn't come into use until the Middle Ages. So, Holman Bible Dictionary is telling the truth. In the early centuries, the Christians were more likely to celebrate the day of a person's death than a person's birthday. Very early in the history, the church had an annual observance of the death of Christ, or Messiah, as I say, and honored many of the early martyrs on the day of their death. Before the 4th century, in the East, like Egypt, Asia Minor, and Antioch, they would observe the Epiphany, the manifestation of God to world, as his baptism, his birth, and the visit of the Magi, but it wasn't until the 4th century that the Christians in Rome began to celebrate the birth of Christ. The practice spread widely and rapidly so that most parts of the Christian world observed the new festival by the end of the century. In the 4th century, the controversy over the nature of Christ, whether he was truly God or a created being, led to the increased emphasis on the doctrine of the Incarnation, the affirmation that the Word was made flesh, John 1:14. See, here's where things start to go south. Whenever man thinks that they need to create answers to biblical truths, that's when the enemy slips somebody into the equation, whispers into somebody's ear, and then suddenly we have a celebration of Christmas to celebrate the Incarnation. But the problem is, there's no evidence. I'm still reading by Holman Bible Dictionary. No evidence remains about the exact date of the birth of Christ. December 25th date was chosen, as much for practical reasons as theological ones. Throughout the Roman Empire, various festivals were held in conjunction with the winter solstice. In Rome, the Feast of the Unconquerable Sun celebrated the beginning of the return of the sun, S-U-N. When Christianity became the religion of the empire, the church either had to suppress the festivals or transform them. So the winter solstice was deemed an appropriate time to celebrate Christ's birth. Thus, the festival of the sun, S-U-N, became the festival of the sun, S-O-N, light of the world. I guess the people that were doing that forgot 1 Corinthians 10:21. You can't drink from the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You can't partake of the Lord's table and the table of demons. I guess if they forgot that, they definitely forgot 2 Corinthians 6:14-17. Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? Communion has with light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial, or what has a believer with an unbeliever? Basically, they violated all of that. Why? Because they wanted to assimilate the pagan feasts and festivals, not with a V, not with a B, into the church. Rather than saying, no, this is wrong, these are the origins, and this is why we won't do them. Compromise never works. Even the Catholic Encyclopedia under Christmas says Christmas was not among the early festivals of the church. The first evidence of the feast is from Egypt. Further, pagan customs entering around the January calendars gravitated to Christmas under the natal day. Catholic theologian Origen, an early Catholic writer, admitted, in the scriptures, no one is recorded to have kept a feast or held a great banquet on his birthday. It is only sinners like Pharaoh and Herod who make great rejoicings over the day in which they were born into this world. Well, wait a second, Roman Catholic Church. Origen's one of your primary theologians that you based a lot of your beliefs on, but yet you still went along with it. Well, let's go secular. What does the Encyclopedia Britannica, from the website encyclopediabritannica.com, it's a very original name, Christmas, the Christian festival celebrating the birth of Jesus, the English term Christmas, Mass on Christ Day, is a fairly recent origin. The early term Yule may have derived from the Germanic Yule or the Anglo-Saxon Jiol, which referred to the feast of the winter solstice. Since the early 20th century, Christmas has been a secular family holiday observed by Christians and non-Christians alike, devoid of Christian elements, and marked by an increasingly elaborate exchange of gifts. I'm still reading EncyclopediaBritannica.com. In this secular Christmas celebration, a mythical figure named Santa Claus plays a pivotal role. Numerous church fathers offered sarcastic comments about the pagan custom of celebrating birthdays, when in fact saints and martyrs should be honored on the days of their martyrdom, their true birthdays, from the church's perspective. Gee, do you think that that's why there's no mention of any of this in the Bible? Maybe. What you think, huh? One widespread explanation of the origin of this date, that December 25th, was the Christianizing of the day of the birth of the unconquered sun. Popular holiday, Roman Empire celebrated winter solstice, symbol of the resurgence of the sun, the casting away of winter, and the heralding of rebirth of spring and summer. Indeed, after December 25th had become widely accepted as the date of Jesus' birth, Christian writers frequently made the connection between the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N, and the birth of the sun, S-O-N. One of the difficulties with this view is that it suggests a nonchalant willingness on the part of the Christian church to appropriate a pagan festival when the early church was so intent on distinguishing itself categorically from pagan beliefs and practices. Well, if Encyclopedia Britannica can understand that, why can't the church? Well, let's look at Encyclopedia Americana, older edition. I don't think it's around anymore. Again, Christmas not observed in the first centuries of the Christian church. It was general celebrate the death of the person, not the birth. 5th century Western church ordered the feast to celebrate the day of the Mithraic rites of the birth of the sun, and at the close of the Saturnalia, because no certain knowledge of the day of Christ's birth existed. Furthermore, the observant of Christmas, you can't even track to 2nd century Christians, because there's no evidence that anyone kept Christmas that early. So what do we know? Well, we do know this much. The early church celebrated Passover. They celebrated Pentecost. They celebrated all of the other Jewish feasts that were commandments from God to do so because it was in the Bible. It wasn't until 350 AD that Pope Julius I declared that Christ's birth would be celebrated on December 25th. And he did this to make it as painless as possible for pagan Romans who were the majority at the time, to convert to Christianity. This new religion would go down a bit easier, knowing that their festivals would not be taken away from them. So the ultimate conclusion, before we get deeper into these facts, that it was 300 years after the death of Jesus of Nazareth before the Roman Church kept Christmas. And it wasn't until the 5th century that it was mandated to be kept throughout the empire as an official festival honoring Christ. So I guess the campaign to keep Christ in Christmas is bogus. Actually, it's more like inserting him into the pagan holiday, or embedding him is more like it. You know, the two times in Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25, it says something very profound. There's a way that seems right to a man, but it ends in death. There's another very popular common phrase that says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, some of you probably know all this and you're in on it. You're nodding your head. Some of you are starting to grit your teeth. Okay, don't do that, because unless you got a good dentist and you got dental insurance, you don't want to do that. Don't grit your teeth. Relax. Listen. I get it. The common justification that I hear when I bring this up regarding Christmas is that, you know, we have replaced the old pagan customs. I get what you're saying, but it's now focused on Christ. It's focused on the birth of Jesus. Well, I've heard that. I've heard all that. I came out of the occult. Nothing I did as a believer in white witchcraft or the New Age or the use of crystals or astral projection can I, in good conscience, knowing the Word of God, knowing the Lord, having the Holy Spirit in me, take any of that and assimilate it into my daily practice. Can't do it. But that's what we do with Christmas. Oh, it doesn't mean that to me. Well, it's not in the Bible. It's not a command holiday, holy day, feast day. We're told to keep his feast days. Was he even born on December 25th? The answer is a resounding no. Not even close. I use a Bible software. If you listen on Wednesday night, you'll hear a lot of the information I get. And this software has almost all the commentaries in it. One of the most popular, recognized, circulated commentaries is Adam Clark's commentary. This is what he says on the topic. It was a custom among Jews to send out their sheep to the deserts about Passover and bring them home at the commencement of the first rain. During the time they were out, the shepherds watched them day and night. As the Passover occurred in the spring, and the first rain began early in October or November, we find the sheep were kept out in the open country during the whole summer. And as these shepherds had not yet brought home their flocks, it is a presumptive argument that October had not yet commenced, and that consequently, our Lord was not born on 25th of December when no flocks were out in the fields. Nor could he have been born later than September, as the flocks were still in the fields by night. On this very ground, Adam Clark's commentary continues, the nativity in December should be given up. The feeding of the flocks by night in the fields is a chronological fact, which cast considerable light upon this disputed point. He also suggests you look at the Talmudist teachings as commentated by Lightfoot. Basically, as I've said on the porch, it is my belief, according to the verbiage by John, that he came to tabernacle amongst us, according to the festivals and the feasts that were to be fulfilled, according to the description in Luke and the historical accounts, he was probably born around the Feast of Tabernacles, which would have been September. But there are 136 different opinions concerning the year of his birth. 136. The Egyptians placed it in January. Some placed it in February. Some placed it in March. Clemens of Alexandrinus is in April. Athenaeus says June. Some say July. Maybe it was August. Lightfoot, according to the commentaries, says September 15th. Then there's October, November, but the Latin Church, which was the supreme in power in the day, infallible in all his judgments, not to be questioned, declared it would be the 25th of December, the very day which the Romans celebrated their goddess, Bruma. I'm sorry, if the historical account of Luke, which is incredibly accurate, says, quote, they were in the same country, shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. If they were abiding in the fields, it wasn't in December. According to both the Book of Ezra and Song of Solomon, shepherds did not stay in the cold, open fields of the rainy season of winter. Didn't do it. So why December 25th? Well, let's talk about the Roman myth of Saturnalia, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. The Roman myth of Saturn, we got to really go back to the source, is identified with the Greek Cronos. Cronos was exiled from Olympus by Zeus. He ruled Latium in a happy, innocent golden age, where he taught his people agriculture and other peaceful arts. So Cronus, or Saturn, is the son of Uranus and Gaia. He leads his brother and sisters, the Titans, not the football ones, the mythical ones, in a revolt against their father and became the king of the gods. He marries the Titan Rhea. They have a total of 6 children, but Cronus slash Saturn has a bad habit of eating his newborn children to prevent them from ever overthrowing him as king of the gods. So finally, at the birth of their last child, Zeus, Rhea tricks him into swallowing a rock instead. I mean, who can't be fooled by a rock and a child? Anyway, then Zeus beats his father with the help of his brothers and sisters and becomes king of the gods. And then the Romans, which did a great job of assimilating all the Greeks' mythology and just changing the names, made Cronus their god, Saturn. So they want to worship Saturn. Saturn's cool. Let's have a festival. Let's call it Saturnalia, the most popular Roman festival, which I've already kind of established we get Christmas from, but we also get New Year's. So originally, Saturnalia was celebrated on the 17th, but then it was extended for 7 days. Oh, according to their Roman history, it was the merriest festival of the year. I just don't think any of the Romans went around saying ho, 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 unless they were looking to hire one. All works and businesses were suspended. Slaves were given temporary freedom to say and do what they liked. Moral restrictions were eased. Presents were freely exchanged. And, of course, we know that Saturday is named from Saturn. Well, let's look at what the Encyclopedia Britannica says about Saturnalia. A time of merrymaking and exchanging of gifts. It's also regarded as the birth date of the Iranian mystery god Mithra, the son of righteousness, S-U-N. The Roman New Year, January 1, houses were decorated with greenery and lights. Gifts were given to children and the poor. To these observances were added the German and Celtic Yule rites when the Teutonic tribes penetrated into Gaul, Britain, and Central Europe. Food, good fellowship, the Yule log, which we talked about, Yule cakes, greenery, fir trees, gifts, greetings, were all different aspects of this festive season. Fires and lights, symbols of warmth and lasting life, have always been associated with the winter festivals, both pagan and Christian. The fact that Christmas is celebrated on the birthday of the unconquered sun, S-U-N, makes this a solar holiday connected with January 1st, the Roman New Year. And you know what the other interesting thing that's kind of struck home to me, because when I was in high school, which was a Catholic all-boys high school in Lower Manhattan, one of the big things every Christmas, and I think a lot of schools still do it, was the selling of the Christmas candle, the Advent candles. And you know, if you sold a lot of candles, you got rewards. And for whatever reason, I was always able to sell a lot. My mother, you know, strong-armed family members and people at work. And it was always a big thing to sell these candles with all the glitter on them. They were red and they were white and big deal. Yeah, I look back on that now and now I know the history. Concerning the gifts of candles, still from the Encyclopedia Britannica, the Romans had a story about an old prophecy from the earliest inhabitants of Latium that they would send heads, yes, human heads, to Hades and light to Saturn. See, the ancient Latins interpreted this to mean human sacrifices, but according to the legend, Hercules advised them to use candles representing light or man and not human heads. Good call, Hercules. December 25th was selected to be the birth of Christ because of its correlation to Saturnalia. I also believe that when during the same period of time, anything that was Jewish was being driven from the church by the Council of Nicaea, by the meetings that were taking place in Constantinople, and also Hanukkah, which happened to take place on the 25th of Kislev, which was usually sometime in December, according to the Jewish calendar. I think what the Roman Catholic Church did was they decided to wipe out the pagan celebrations and the Jewish celebrations in one fell swoop of a counterfeit holiday. We don't know when he was born. Christmas is a man-made myth, a myth that we, for some reason, feel obligated to perpetuate. Businesses, commercials, it's big business. Hey, what about Santa? What about jolly old ho-ho-ho Saint Nick? Well, let's take a look at that. According to Langer's Encyclopedia World History, under the article of Santa, well, Santa was a common name for Nimrod throughout Asia Minor. This is also the same fire god that came down the chimneys of the ancient pagans, and the same fire god to whom infants were burned and eaten in human sacrifice among those who were once God's people. Gee, isn't there something in the Bible about Moloch and children and fire? And I mean, isn't that bad? History.com, the legend of Santa Claus, traced back hundreds of years to a monk named Saint Nicholas. It's believed that Nicholas was born sometime around 280 AD in Patara near Myra, which is modern-day Turkey. Hope you're taking notes in case you're ever on Jeopardy. Much admired for his piety and kindness, St. Nicholas became the subject of many legends. It's said he gave away all his inherited wealth and traveled the countryside helping the poor and sick. And I've read this, and I believe that, you know, it's historically true. One of the best known of the St. Nicholas stories is that he saved three poor sisters who were being sold into slavery or prostitution by their father by providing them with a dowry so they could be married. Over the course of many years, his popularity spread and he became known the protector of children and sailors, and the feast day of December 6th is celebrated as the anniversary of his death. I get it. I believe he was real. I believe he did some really good things. I just don't understand how they manufactured an entire make-believe character around there. But wait a second. If you read my book, Supernatural Battle, I talk about the whole pig in the blanket truth. It means you have to wrap a partial truth around a lie to get people to swallow it. The modern Santa Claus grew out of traditions surrounding, of course, the historical St. Nicholas and the British figure of Father Christmas, and the Dutch figure of Sinterklaas, also based on St. Nicholas. There's some that maintain Santa Claus was also absorbed the Germanic god Wodan, W-O-D-A-N, who is associated with the pagan midwinter event of Yule, who led the wild hunt, which was a ghostly procession through the sky. Let me say that part again, as some of you are watching NORAD for Santa on his sleigh and his reindeers to come through the sky, and we'll get to that too. The Germanic god Woden, who's actually the Norse god Odin, led a ghostly procession through the sky. So the leader of that hunt is Odin. Sometimes his name is Jolnir, which means Yule figure. Sometimes it's Langbrarur, which is long beard in the Old Norse. Matter of fact, if you look up the pictures, he looks like our current jolly old Saint Nick. Folklorist Margaret Baker in the book Discovering Christian Customs and Folklore, A Guide to Seasonal Rites Throughout the World, maintains that the appearance of Santa Claus or Father Christmas, whose day is the 25th of December, owes much to Odin, the old blue-hooded, cloaked, white-bearded gift-bringer of the North, who rode the midwinter sky on his 8-footed steed, 4 in front, 4 in back. No Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth, didn't have it then. This horse had 4 hooves in the front and 4 in the back. And he visited people with gifts. Odin, transformed to Father Christmas, then becomes Saint Santa Claus, peppered with a little Saint Nicholas. And let's add the whole Christ child storyline to it, and now you have a whole Christmas stage. Come on, folks. Are you getting this yet? Or have you tuned me out? Or have you put your fingers in your ears? I can't hear you. According to National Geographic, the remains of the... This is a tremendous bit of information that you're going to want to save. The remains of the Greek bishop, the original guy, St. Nicholas, who lived in the 3rd and 4th century, are housed in Bari, Italy, in a crypt at the Basilica San Nicola, which was repaired in the 1950s. And they found his skull and his bones. Did you know that the Roman Catholic Church keeps the skulls, the bones, the limbs, the fingers of dead saints? They bring them out, they parade them around, they do services to them and with them. So how did it get to America? Well, when the Dutch settlers arrived in New Amsterdam, which would have been New York, they brought with them their practice of leaving shoes out for St. Nicholas to fill with gifts. I don't know about you. I know some people that I wouldn't put anything in their shoes except an air freshener or something. Anyway, so they would leave their shoes out for St. Nicholas to fill with gifts, which brought the name, which brought the custom, and then it morphed into St. Nicholas. And how that happened is thanks to Washington Irving in 1809, who took the original old stern bishop from Turkey and turned him into jolly Saint Nick in his Knickerbocker History of New York. And most of the rest of America's Christmas traditions come from that. Old Nick, by the way, is also a recognized term for the devil in some worlds. So the authors of the Saint Nicholas Center explain it this way. In January of 1809, Washington Irving joined the society, which would be the Knickerbocker History Society. And on St. Nicholas Day that same year, he published satirical fiction called The Knickerbocker's History of New York, with numerous references to the jolly old St. Nick. It was satire. I don't think he meant it to become American folklore. The Santa that we know today came to us in a narrative by a narrative poem by a man named Clement C. Moore. Again, double jeopardy. The author of The Night Before Christmas. Who is Clement C. Moore, Alex? Anyway, Clement C. Moore wrote The Night Before Christmas, The original poem was titled A Visit from St. Nicholas, commonly known today as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And he went on to, of course, elaborate on Santa's reindeer. He named them, and, you know, we get the whole secular thing from a poem by who? Clement Seymour, yes. According to History.com, the stores then began to advertise Christmas shopping in 1820. By the 1840s, newspapers were creating entire separate sections for holiday advertisements, which now start in October. Anyway, which often featured images of the newly popular Santa Claus. In 1841, thousands of children visited a Philadelphia shop to see a life-sized Santa Claus model. Then somebody had the brilliant idea of, what if we dressed up somebody? Instead of a life-sized model, how about we have a life-sized person? So it was only a matter of time before the stores began to attract children and their parents with the lure at a decked out, bearded, live Santa Claus. I'm sorry, who came up with the idea, let's let your children sit on some strange man's lap? Yeah. I look back on that now, and I'm wondering why I never... you don't know who that is under that suit. It's definitely not Santa Claus. We've talked about this part before, and I'm having some fun, folks, because this is so out there and so wild. And the fact that anybody can hear this, do their own homework, read it, see the videos on YouTube, and still walk away and say, I'm going to do it anyway, is beyond me. But anyway, let's talk about Krampus. Oh, we've talked about him before. Krampus, in folklore, he's the horned anthropomorphic figure, half goat, half demon, who during the Christmas season punishes the children who've misbehaved. You see, he's in contrast to jolly old St. Nicholas, who rewards the well-behaved. You know, he knows whether you've been naughty or you're nice. Well, Krampus deals with the naughty ones. Krampus is one of the companions of St. Nicholas in Austria, Bavaria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, and even parts of northern Italy. I posted it on SRT's Facebook page, a picture of a recent Krampus parade. I think it was in Austria or Bavaria, one of those places, with this giant guy dressed up as a horned demon, you know, is picking up children and women, and I don't know, maybe took them home, had their babies, who knows? But the origin of the figure is unclear. Some folklorists and anthropologists believe it dates back to pre-Christian origins. You think? The history of the Krampus figure stretches back to pre-Christian Alpine traditions, discussed for the first time in an article published in 1958 by Maurice Bruce, and this is what he wrote. There seems to be little doubt as to his true identity, for in no other form is the full regalia of the horned god of the witches so well preserved. The birch, apart from its phallic significance, may have a connection with the initiation rites of certain covens, rites which entailed binding and scourging as a form of a mock death. The chains, because he drags chains with them, could have been introduced in a Christian attempt to bind the devil, but then again, they're also a remnant of pagan initiation rites. See, Krampus appears in many forms, but they all have a common physical characteristic. He's hairy, he's usually brown or black. He has cloven hooves and the horns of a goat. He has a long, pointed tongue that just kind of like hangs out of his mouth. And he has fangs. In traditional parades, like the Krampuslav, which is Krampus Run, so I'm sorry, you see Krampus, you want to run. In the Krampus Slav, the young men dressed up as Krampus participate. in the annual events in most alpine towns. And that was probably what the picture was I saw. Let's see, is there any other information that we could look at? Let's look at the Dallas Theological Seminary. Not a big fan of what comes out of there, but their theological journal, Bibliotheca Sacra, is the first published, oldest theological journal in the United States, published in 1844. And it states that the interchange of presents between friends is like a characteristic of Christmas and the Saturnalia, which adopted by Christians from the pagans, which was clearly admonished by Tertullian. See, Tertullian, 160 to 230 A.D., one of the earliest Christian leaders, one of the theological giants of the Roman Catholic Church, not only did he not celebrate Christmas, he called it what it was. He's referred to as the father of Latin Christianity, and he warned the church that to participate in winter celebration made one beholden to pagan gods. He complained that too many fellow Christians had copied the pagan practice of adorning their houses with lamps and with wreaths of laurel at Christmas time. But you see, he wasn't the only one. Irenaeus, from 130 to 200 AD, Tertullian, which I already mentioned, Origen of Alexandria, which I mentioned, 165 to 264, they all went out of their way to criticize the pagan practices that we call Christmas. They mocked them. Those were the ones that made the sarcastic comments, according to, I think it was Encyclopedia Britannica. They mocked the Roman celebration of birth anniversaries. They mocked its inclusion and celebration as a Christian event. And they said that as far as they were concerned, Christmas was not supposed to be celebrated in any way, shape, or form. Tertullian went on to say, observing the midwinter celebrations make Christians appear to be followers of pagan gods, and since pagans would not intentionally celebrate days considered by many to be Christians, Christians should not celebrate days that are honored by the heathen. He felt that those who profess Christ should not celebrate Saturnalia, New Year's, or other pagan days as a form of idolatry. So what we get back to is, if you say Jesus is the reason for the season, and I used to say it, it's wrong. He's become the excuse for the season. He's not the reason. And those who profess to know him and then observe the pagan elements of these holidays should just admit they're doing it because they want to, not because they should. Hey, what about the whole Christmas caroling thing? I used to really get emotional about that. Yeah. Its origins are in Saturnalia, in ancient Babylon, the feast of the son of Isis, the goddess of nature, was celebrated on December 25th. Raucous partying, gluttonous eating and drinking, gift givings were all traditions of the feast. See, in ancient Rome, the tradition of the mummers, M-U-M-M-E-R-S, were born. The mummers were groups of costumed singers and dancers who traveled from house to house entertaining their neighbors. This is where the Christmas tradition of caroling came from. In Northern Europe, many other traditions that we now consider Christian were never heard of in the time of Messiah, were never heard of in the Book of Acts church, were never heard for the first 300 years of the church. The whole Yule thing, the Yule log, the celebration of that, we're honoring the sun. Yule, by the way, means wheel. So the wheel is a pagan symbol for the sun. Mistletoe, hey, where did that come from? Mistletoe is considered a sacred plant. And the custom of kissing under the mistletoe began as a fertility ritual. What about the red little holly berries on the reeds? Well, those were thought to be the food of the gods. The tree, the one Christmas tree, the one thing that unites all Christians on Christmas, it also unites all of Northern Europe during the winter solstice. The live evergreen were brought into homes during the harsh winters as a reminder to the inhabitants that their crops would grow again. Evergreen boughs were sometimes carried as totems of good luck and were presented at weddings. I guess that's where we get the wreaths and the round floral arrangements, again representing fertility. The Druids used the fir tree as a religious symbol, holding their sacred ceremonies while surrounding and worshiping the trees. Most historians agree that Christ Mass, or Christmas, began in Germany, although the Catholics and the Lutherans seem to disagree which church celebrated it first. The earliest record of an evergreen being decorated in a Christmas celebration was in 1521 in the Alsace region of Germany. A prominent Lutheran minister of that day cried blasphemy, better that they should look to the tree of life, Christ himself. In Europe, pagans did not cut down whole evergreen trees or bring them into their homes and decorate them. They would consider that too destructive of nature. But during the Roman celebration of Saturnalia, they did decorate their houses with clippings of evergreen shrubs. And then they did something else that some of you probably did. They decorated these living trees with bits of bits of metal and replicas of their god Bacchus. The whole adorning of the trees. Yeah. The English Puritans, when they came to America, they condemned the customs associated with Christmas. The Yule log, the holly, the mistletoe. Oliver Cromwell preached against the heathen traditions of Christmas carols, decorated trees, and the whole sacred event. American Pilgrim Governor, Second Governor William Bradford, tried to stamp out all the pagan mockery at Christmas time. Christmas trees were not used by the Puritans in colonial times. In fact, they were forbidden. In 1851, Pastor Henry Schwann of Cleveland, Ohio, appears to have been the person responsible for decorating the first Christmas tree in an American church. Hey, there's a thing you want attached to your name. His parishioners condemned the idea as a pagan practice. Some even threatened the pastor with violence, but soon the objections dissipated. It's kind of what happens. There'll be some people that'll stand up, that'll tell the truth, that'll point things out, but then the majority will say, oh, you're being ridiculous. It's not what it means to me. And that whole caroling fertility rites thing, first time in the church, 13th century. Let's go back to that kissing under the mistletoe thing. I never knew where it came from until I did this research. I think we did this in the first year of Reflections in the Dark. The Druids considered it to be a magical plant. The Vikings as well. So the Romans honored the god Saturn, and to keep him happy, fertility rituals took place under the mistletoe. We don't go as far as they did under the mistletoe, but that's where the kissing tradition happened. I think they did more than that. In the Norse, the warriors from opposing tribes would meet under the mistletoe and lay down their arms. It was considered peace and reconciliation. It's also in the Norse mythology associated with Freyja, also known as Freya, the goddess associated with love, sex, beauty, fertility, gold, war, and death. She's busy. She also rules over the heavenly afterlife and receives half of those that die in battle. Half go to Odin's Hall in Valhalla, and half go to her. She's the Roman counterpart of Venus. You saw the recent Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. She's the daughter of Odin. She's the queen of hell that the female character Kate Blanchett plays. What about this magical delivery of gifts? You know, this figure flying through the sky. Well, according to the Dutch Sinterklaas mythology, we've already added the elements of Saint Nick with his ghostly trek through the sky. The Italians, my wonderful people, of course have La Befana. La Befana is a kindly Italian witch who drops off treats for well-behaved children. How does she do that? Well, she flies on a broomstick. Or Frau Hol, who gives gifts to women at the time of the winter solstice. And I already told you that on Saturnalia. At the end of Saturnalia, there's another festival called Sigillaria, which ends on January 1st, rather, and that's where they exchange gifts. Usually it was just one gift. It wasn't like it is today. 47 gifts and max out a credit card. Now, there have been some, like myself, who've tried to find a way to make it work, try to find a way to mollify family members and do all that. I'm having a harder time doing that. Could it be that this time of year was when the Magi showed up to give the infant, not the baby? Baby Jesus was only a baby for a short period of time. Then he became an infant. Then he became a man. He's coming back as a man. He's not coming back as baby Jesus. So if you ever see somebody say, sweet baby Jesus, slap them. He's not a baby anymore. Don't slap them, because then you'll say, I did it, and it'll get everybody in trouble. But walk away. Think about it. Visualize it. Anyway, is it possible that historically, from the time they saw the star, that they wound up in Bethlehem around that time? Yes, it is very possible. Can I prove that? No. But that's where the practice of gift-giving, for some, comes from. That the wise men, we don't know that there were three, we just assume there were three, because there were three gifts. Could have been one, could have been five. Could have been an entire basketball team, I don't know. But we do know that they did show up and they did give him gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which I mentioned on Wednesday night on the porch. That's how Joseph and Mary provided for themselves and baby Yeshua in Egypt. But the fact is, we can't prove that. We can prove historically that the ancient Egyptians celebrated some form of this. They didn't use evergreens. They used palm trees, because the palm tree is a symbol of resurrection and rebirth. They often brought the fronds into their homes during the time of the winter solstice. Isn't it amazing that all these areas that have their own gods, which are possibly fallen angels or fallen watchers, or the firstborn of their offspring, have their own little celebration that's similar? Is that how all this ties together? I think it is. But the fact is this. We can say all we want that the red berries on the holly bush represents the blood of Jesus. It does not. We're just projecting onto it a meaning that allows us to accept something we shouldn't accept. Or that the sharp-edged green leaves represent the crown of thorns. I've been guilty of all this. I've looked at the symbolism and found a way to justify it. Because I think somewhere deep down inside of me, even before I knew the facts, even before I knew what I'm telling you, I knew something wasn't right. But I was being told by people that I respected, learned people, people that had led me to the Lord. But once my eyes were open, once I read the truth, I could no longer accept the lie. The pig in the blanket was no longer tasty anymore. I could no longer accept the pre-Christian pagan culture of the Holly King doing his annual battle with the Oak King. Holly was known as a wood that would drive off evil spirits, and it came in handy during the darker half of the year. the ornaments on the tree. Saturnalia, I already told you to put the metal ornaments on the outside trees, representing a god, their family deity, or Saturn himself. The early Germanic tribes decorated trees with fruit and candles in honor of Odin for the solstice. Am I celebrating a mystical, magical birth like Mithras, the early Roman god of the sun, or Horus, the Egyptian god? No, I'm not. I'm not going to. Because I can tie it all back to the fallen watchers on Mount Hermon, their incursion into mankind, and the beginning of what they taught, which spread into Canaan and Mesopotamia and Babylon. They were counterfeit stories made up to deceive people ahead of time because they knew what would happen. They lived in a different reality. So the question becomes, and we're almost done, now that I've shaken the old Christmas tree, now that all this has fallen out and you can check it, you can go to all the encyclopedias and dictionaries and everything I quoted, look it up for yourself. The rest is up to you. Do with it what you will. But I will tell you this. Once my eyes were opened, I couldn't do it anymore. Can't serve two masters. You can't drink from two cups. You can't eat from two tables. Gods, Yeshua's, the Lord's, and Hasatan, the fallen, their demonic offspring. You can't do it. Millions will anyway. Millions are doing it tonight, and millions are going to do it tomorrow. And they're going to continue to do it for years to come, always knowing in the back of their mind. This has nothing to do with the birth of Jesus of Nazareth. Maybe this was a little more serious than usual. I have news for you, folks. 2018... is going to be a finger in the face of the fallen. It's going to be more than just confronting. It's going to be a lot like this. It's going to be tackling things. It's going to be bringing people on that will maybe validate or maybe be. I'll have to confront. I'm not playing nice anymore. I'm not cutting corners anymore. Not that I ever really did, but you know, sometimes you try to tone things down. You try to go along with people and they're choices. There just comes a point where you have to draw a line in the sand and say no more. We're either going to do it right, we're either going to shine the light into the darkness, and we're going to do it with uncompromised perspectives and uncompromised hands, or we're not going to do it at all. I hope you'll continue the ride with me. I hope you'll continue to listen. Reflections in the Dark is going to shine that light into the darkness. It's not going to back off. It's not going to dim it. It's not going to filter it in any way, shape, or form, because we're running out of time. It's incredibly dark out there. The darkness has gotten greater over the earth and a deep darkness over the people, but this is the time to shine the light and tell the truth, and that's why on Christmas Eve, I am doing this. I'm sure some people would say, wow, great information, but wrong night to do it. No, perfect night to do it. Perfect night to do it. Now you have to decide. You have to choose this day whom you will serve. As for me, I'm going to live in the light. I'm Richard Grund. This has been Reflections in the Dark on Firefall Talk Radio.